Lura.
Kasula. Warunga. You haven't heard of Warunga?
Hunspee.
Blackcap.
Rosehill.
Oatly.
On ABC Radio Sydney, this is Breakfast with Robbie Buck and Wendy Harmer.
Well, every morning, as you know, we catch up with Dr. Norman Swong usually to get an update on all things COVID and health in general. This morning, we're very, very lucky to have Professor Catherine Bennett as his stand-in. She's chair in epidemiology at Deakin University.
Morning, Catherine.
Good morning to you both.
Well, we were watching the marches across the country, a lot of anti-vaxxers yesterday, and we've had a bit of it on our show here recently as well. And we thought we'd start by asking you about some of the more common myths around the vaccine that have managed to get a foothold but don't have any scientific backing at all. Are you comfy with that?
Of course.
Yeah.
Number one, I don't want to trust the vaccine because it was rushed. It hadn't been developed properly nor tested adequately.
Yeah, that's the common one, isn't it? What we saw with the rollout, with the development and then rollout of this vaccine was actually unprecedented. I hate to use that word, but it's true.
Yeah.
We had a lot of investment, obviously, but we also had commitment from regulatory bodies to look at the data in real time. They didn't wait for a trial to run and then look at the data and then approvals and so on. They actually were looking at the data as it was coming in because this was such a priority for everyone. So there was a lot of condensation of red tape and other timelines in this. The other thing about the trials themselves is you have to wait till you both, you know, recruit enough people into the trials, but also the way you determine the effectiveness of the vaccine is you need to then wait until people in both arms of the trial, those with a vaccine, those with a placebo, actually get exposed to the virus. So you get enough of an infection rate to make out, you know, the efficacy to actually determine that. And the sad truth was that not only did they not have trouble recruiting for the trials because people were desperate for something, particularly in the countries where these trials were run, but they also obviously had very high rates of infection and exposure. So they were able to determine more quickly than you would with other, you know, lesser frequent conditions, how effective the vaccine was. So all those things came together. Some countries overseas did go to an emergency determination based on the data, the early safety data, and that efficacy. In Australia, we didn't. We waited till we had the full 6 months data in because we had the virus under control in the community. And then it was given emergency designation as a provisional approval in Australia, as we do with anything new, that puts it under that determination for 2 years as they continue to watch safety in the community, which is what we do anyway. And again, the incredibly large rollout gives us really rich information to keep tracking that, and we've been able to detect even the most rare side effects, and that's important to have that information as well.
Another oft-cited reason for not wanting to be vaccinated, there are severe side effects to the COVID-19 vaccines.
Yeah, and that is important. You know, you really want to keep track of those things, which is why that ongoing monitoring is important. In all countries in the world, we have set up these vaccine adverse event registers so that anybody, whether it's the person themselves, their doctor, whoever, can report in if they think someone has had an event soon after a vaccine that could be associated with the vaccine. So we do see those numbers, and a lot of people react to those numbers, but that's everything anybody's had happen. You know, my house was broken into the week after I was vaccinated, you know.
Right.
It's an unfortunate coincidence, but it's not a side effect.
Yeah.
But it's important that serious effects, and particularly if people pass away, that that's looked at. So that is looked at closely. In Australia, we've got a really thorough, you know, TGA process, including our follow-up of those conditions, but we're also learning from around the world. So we do know about the AstraZeneca clotting. Thankfully, we are talking about something that was less than 1 in a million when it came to deaths, far less. And so that's something. And we're also aware of the inflammation for the mRNA vaccines. But again, in that case, thankfully, no deaths. and I think all but four are, you know, out of hospital. And so it's in most cases only half actually were hospitalised. You don't want anyone to have it, but it's less severe than the inflammation that comes with infection. But if people aren't protected by the vaccine.
So, and that's a good point to make, isn't it? The infection itself has much, much higher risks than the vaccines do.
That's right. And it may be the people that react to the vaccine might have been the same who would have been at higher risk of having that inflammation following an infection. And it's more severe and it's more common if it comes with the infection. So it's unfortunate. You don't want to have any side effects, but you'll always have that risk that you'll have very rare side effects. And we are still talking about, you know, one in 100,000 or so. So again, thankfully, very rare.
All right, let's just go on to one more before we take your calls and text. Another reason people say they don't need to get vaccinated, the COVID vaccines don't work because you can still get COVID after vaccination.
Yeah, this leaky vaccine thing. People say, you know, if it doesn't do it completely, then it doesn't do it. But the reality is it actually, even after 6 months, protects you from getting an infection. In the UK, their data show in the first 3 months you have this booster effect. Your infection rate in your, you know, vaccinated community is a quarter of what it is in the unvaccinated community. We're still seeing something like that here. Two-thirds of our cases in Victoria are in the unvaccinated still, and they're such a small percentage of the population now. But when it comes to looking at also whether you pass the virus on to other people, again, it doesn't protect you straight up. I mean, it doesn't mean that even if you get infected, you can't pass it on. You get the same infecting dose, but you have a shorter infection, so you're infectious for less time. So in both cases, getting the infection and passing it on, it is much reduced if you're vaccinated, particularly in those first months after you're vaccinated. But even after 6 months, it's still half as likely to be infected.
Right.
So you don't throw it out because it's not complete and 100%. You actually say, well, I'll take half as likely or I'll get a booster.
All right. Some of the clarity and I guess debunking some of those myths that we've seen in recent weeks. Professor Catherine Bennett is with us this morning, the Chair of Epidemiology at Deakin University. Bronwyn has called in from Marsfield and this is a good one to go to.
Yeah, I think it's another one of these myths.
Yes, it is. Thanks, Bronwyn.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm double vaccinated but have a couple of friends that aren't. And their argument, I don't know what to say to them, is that the vaccine, the MRN, changes your genetic makeup and therefore, you know, you won't be able to fight other things, you know, later in life. So what do I say?
Thanks, Bronwyn. Really good question. The important thing to tell people is that the mRNA, even though we're actually putting that messenger RNA into our system, never goes into our own cells. Nucleus, where our DNA is. So that's one thing, that there's no mingling of genetic material. This just sits out in the outer cell, as do our own mRNA when we produce it and produce this protein. What it's doing is actually priming your immune system. So it's just like getting a cold or something else. It's giving your immune system something to respond to. If anything, it's exercising your immune system. So it's certainly not debilitating it in any way. It's actually allowing the immune system to do what it does best. We're just giving it a controlled exposure, so it recognises COVID by seeing this small part of the protein spike that we produce in our cells, and then that primes the immune system. So, in fact, it's got nothing to do with how we react to anything else. If anything, it's just stimulating our immune system short-term to prepare us in case we do get exposed to the virus.
So, Catherine, it's a total myth. That argument is a complete myth.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Bronwyn.
All righty then. Thanks so much for that.
Good luck with that. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Gosh, there's some crazy information out there, Catherine. How are you feeling and dealing with it all?
Oh, I think one of the hardest things, Wendy, is seeing families torn apart by this. You have often now it's only one person, but they're sort of sticking with this, and the rest of the family to be quite distressed. And so, exactly like Bronwyn's doing, trying to find the ways to keep the conversations open is really important, because you can't just say to people you're wrong. You have to kind of say, look, I understand where that's coming from, but actually this is how it works, you know. And I think the more we can have those conversations, the the better, because otherwise it's just going to get harder and harder for families that are, you know, literally being torn apart, or where people can't come together at Christmas.
Crazy. Hey, Catherine, thank you so much for stepping up this morning. We really appreciate your time. We know you're very, very busy, so thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Good on you. Thanks, Professor again. Catherine Bennett, who is a chair of epidemiology at Deakin University. Yeah, and taking the place of Norman on this Monday morning.
Wake up for breakfast.
The Harbour Bridge, the Opera House on one end, Luna Park on the other. It's just the perfect spot.
Ferries across to Manly, just stunning.
ABC Radio Sydney.